Films with Frost. Terry Frost.
And here he is, the man himself, Terry Frost. As always on a Thursday evening, he brings us fantastic films. This film is terrific. It's called The Big Knife. It's from 1955. And I thank you for this one, Terry.
I'm glad you like it. Everyone, how are you today?
I am extremely well. Well, look, OK, first of all, paint us a picture.
OK, I'll let you know who the stars are first. Jack Palance is in it, Ida Lupino, Rod Steiger, Shelley Winters, Everett Sloan. It's set in Hollywood, and it's the story of an actor called Charlie Castle, who's a very big, successful movie star. And he lives in a huge home, and his wife Marion and he are kind of separated, but they don't really want the press to know about it. And he's reluctant to re-sign a contract with Hof Federated Pictures because he's sick of the kind of movies they make. They make tripe that's very popular. He wants to make some more serious films and take his career in a different direction and kind of stay true to what he believes. But he's being pressured by the studio in the form of Stanley Schreiner Hoff, played by Rod Steiger, and his henchman, played by Wendell Corey, who has the fantastic name of Smiley Coy.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It's a story of a day in his life and the pressures he comes under. He's got some dark secrets in his past that the studios help cover up, and they're using that to pressure him into signing for a 7-year contract.
That's right. Okay.
And it goes from there.
Shall we have a listen to a bit of a clip so we can get a feel for the feel of the movie?
Charlie, are you renewing with Hoff or not?
Where does Hank Teagle get the nerve to propose to you?
Oh, forget about Hank. He's leaving for New York in 2 weeks.
To find a 40-cent gin?
Oh, he's writing a new novel. It's been on the wagon for weeks. Look, you say you want me to come back to you. Well, believe me, I won't. Not ever, if you sign that contract.
Oh, that again? I never expected to see the day when a firm deal would give you chills and fear.
Neither did I. I'm as human as the next one, and it's a fabulous deal, but it's for 7 years, and the life that goes with it. Or should I say the death that goes with it? Look at yourself. You're half dead right now. I haven't seen you sparkle in years. You put on a show for other people, but I'm your wife. I know it. Charlie, my Charlie, what's happened to your mind, your spirit, your soul? Charlie Cass, the guy I married, he was a tiger. You liked to argue because you believed in things. And what you believed in, you fought for. And that was Charlie Cass. What do you believe in now?
Well, he does believe in himself. And that's kind of emotional blackmail, isn't it?
It is a little bit, but I think as the arc of the story continues, you find out that she's right in a sense because, yes, it may be emotional blackmail, but she wants the husband she married back. She doesn't want the kind of puppet that the studios have as her husband, and she doesn't want to spend another 7 years seeing him diminish himself and deteriorate by being under the thumb of the studio. It's a very negative portrayal of Hollywood in this film. But a very vivid one. It's based on a play by Clifford Odets from 1949, and it's got a really weird kind of Odets. His style of dialogue is very kind of poetic and metaphorical and a street talk kind of thing. It's kind of got a New York street talk feel about it. It takes a little while for you to get your ear around it, but it is quite vivid and evocative dialogue all through this film, and it's all character-based rather than the plot. The plot is carried by the character instead of the characters being little pawns in the plot.
They're very much so, incredibly well said, because that's the perfect description of this particular film. There isn't many, but well, you know, it starts wonderfully, doesn't it, with Saul Bass titles. Now, that guy, title expert, at the opening of this movie is stunning, is it not?
It is. It's a very, very simple opening with Jack Palance kind of curled up over himself with a darkened background. And you know right from the word go, as the title has come up, that this man's under enormous strain.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of the scenes where Charlie Castle is just bent over himself as if he's got a stomach pain, as if he's trying to kind of hide away from the world by folding himself onto himself. And the physical acting and the other acting that Jack Palance does in this film is fantastic. People don't really know him as a fine character actor, but he did a number of things during his career, even before he got the Oscar for doing City Slickers. late in his career, really he had a moment when he was a fine character actor. And this shows it very, very well. He holds his own against particularly Rod Steiger, who overacts enormously as Stanley Schreiner Hoff.
Doesn't he ever.
And it's a role that he does. And it's a role, though, that really does need overacting, because this guy, the only character in movies I can really compare him to is, if people have seen Sexy Beast with Ben Kingsley playing Don Logan, kind of psychopathic criminal, Hoff is that same kind of determined, selfish, focused person, without the filthy language, of course.
Yeah.
But he's very much that kind of sociopathic character. And there's a lot of talk in the media at the moment about sociopathic CEOs. Is it good for business to have a CEO who's a selfish sociopath? Isn't bad, that kind of thing. There's a lot of psychological stuff going on now about that. And this is what reminded me of when I was reading those newspaper articles recently, is Stanley Schreiner Hoff running a studio and letting nothing deter him from what he wants.
The person, I don't think this is a giveaway, the person who he has an affair with, Jack Palance, Connie Bliss, I don't know what the actress is called, but it's Connie in the movie. She is a fine little actress. That's a really nice little cameo that she does through this film.
It's Jean Hagen. I think she was in Singing in the Rain.
Oh,
she was
right.
The person with the squeaky voice in Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Better actress than a lot of the roles that she got, but this one she just got those few scenes that were really punchy and really kind of knowing as well. A very fine actress.
Thing is peppered with fine performances. You've got to say, Shelley Winters, as you mentioned, is in it, and her performance is fantastic.
It is, and again, she was a finer actress than a lot of the roles that she got in films in her later day when she put on a little more weight. She was in the Actors Studio in New York as well. She studied there, and even though she kind of did look, and people are a fan of hers, excuse me, she looked a bit like a blonde bimbo when she was younger, really, She was a fine actress and really worked very hard at her craft during a lot of her career, and was very, very nurturing of younger actors coming up as she became older. She really did give tips and assistance to a number of younger actors who have since credited her for doing that.
Oh, nice. Now, in the credits at the beginning here, it says, and Miss Shelley Winters. Why did they have to put Miss before her? Because they didn't put Miss for Ida Lupino or
Jean Hagen. Yeah, I think it was, and this is purely speculation on my part, that Shelley is a gender ambiguous name. Could be short for Sheldon. It could be a lady's name.
Right.
So I think that this was one of her very early movies, and to get her name known, they wanted it to be known that she was one of the female characters in the movie.
Okay, because you mentioned the Actors Studio. I was going to ask you if Palance went to that, because his style is very much the Actors Studio style.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he did or not. I don't have that at hand. I do know that he did have a bit of a facial disfigurement during World War II, and there was a lot of plastic surgery, and that gave him that kind of drawn features. He was of Ukrainian heritage. And he had that kind of Slavic look anyway, but it was just increased by that kind of tightness of the skin from some kind of injury. And there was never very much told about it. It was just part of who he was and the way he looked. But, as an actor, he did do a lot of television early on as well.
I didn't know that about him, that he'd had a war wound.
Yep, kind of like the Australian Prime Minister John Gorton did. John Gorton had that kind of bashed up mug a little bit, and that was because of an injury he acquired during World War II.
Geez, you're a mine of information, and don't I love it? You're on you're on After Dark on ABC Local Radio, right across the territory with, as I would like to call him, the walking encyclopedia, Terry Frost and Ivor Cole. Another person that that I thought was extremely good was Everett Sloan. Now, I'm sure everybody would know Everett Sloan's face.
Everett Sloan, if people don't remember him, he was the bad guy in Lady from Shanghai, the Orson Welles film. If you look at Everett Sloan playing the character in The Lady from Shanghai and his character of Ned Danziger, who is Charlie Castle's agent in this film, two totally different roles. He was an incredible chameleon of an actor. He could hide himself in a role really, really well. He was kind of like a fairly short statured guy, red hair, though you can't see it in this black and white film, and really an extremely fine character actor. He was part of the Mercury Players that Orson Welles had in the 1930s and early 1940s, and came up through that kind of radio things that they did there. And he was in Citizen Kane as well. And he just really is a fantastic character actor who didn't get the roles he deserved. He did some things in television which were quite good as well. And there was all those anthology dramas that were on television in the 50s and early 60s. And Everett Sloan turns up in those occasionally, and he is just superb in this role, playing a very slightly obsequious but a very compassionate man who is trying to negotiate between Charlie Castle and the Hoff character played by Rod Steiger, and really bring them together to get some kind of compromise. And unfortunately, it doesn't end up that way.
No, we don't want to say at the end. But, I mean, there's a lovely little bit. Well, actually, why don't we listen to a bit more of the movie? You want to set the scene for this clip?
Yep, this is a conflict between Hoff and Castle, I think. And I'll just let it play out. And you'll hear some of what Rod Steiger is in this film and the kind of bombastic asshole, really, that he plays.
Hear me, Stanley. Charlie's main worry in the past, and it's a commendable thing in itself, he wants to make better pictures.
I meant what I said. I'm not bargaining with you, Stanley.
You're out of the bargaining position! But it's true, I can't force you to sign, can I?
That's just what you're trying to do!
Charlie, Stanley!
Shut up, Matt!
Oh, Charles, I'm going to have to take this very much amiss. I offer you my hand, and you spit in my face.
No, Stanley, Charlie.
Stanley, I want you to let me go. We don't like each other.
I know that, you know it. But I'll promise you anything you want if you'll just let me go.
Stanley, please listen to him. He's asking this from the bottom of his soul.
Shut up!
Charles, I solemnly abjure realism. I need your physical presence on the land. I need your body, not your goodwill. Now, Charlie, I want you to sign this paper with one of the pens that ended the Second World War. This was used by a great American, General Douglas MacArthur. Charles, I can't tell you how many long months of constructive dreaming have gone in this moment, and I will let nobody or nothing stand in the way of that dream. I'm asking you for the last time. Please let me go. I can't force you to sign, can I?
Wowie zowie. Frank Duvall music. Mm. Well, that really wasn't music, but the incidental music there was just fantastic, was it not?
It was superb. And Duvall's music in this film is kind of very standard. And it's only used sparingly in the film too. There are a lot of long takes in this film. So having a lot of music in there would have interrupted the flow of what people were saying. And of course, this is a very dialogue-heavy movie. But where it's used very punctually and as an important piece of punctuation to the drama, as people heard in that particular clip. And the cinematography is excellent as well. Ernest Laszlo, who'd worked with the director Robert Aldrich in a number of other films, he did things like Apache with Burt Lancaster and another war movie called Attack, which had Lee Marvin in it as well, and Jack Palance as well. Really a fine cinematographer, and he makes each of the long scenes in this film very interesting by the way he holds the camera. And the set itself, it's pretty much set in one place, a garden and a living room. And the living room set in this film is fantastic. I would love to have a living room like the one in Charlie Castle's house.
Yeah.
It's got the beautiful 50s look about it. It's got a sunken area and a lot of couches. And
it's huge.
Really, it's huge, and it's a really good-looking set. If I had a choice, I'd build a house like that one.
What about the guilty secret about the accident that happened?
Yeah, this is a guilty secret, and this is based on a number of things that happened a number of times in Hollywood where somebody else takes the rap for something that an important property does. I won't give away what the secret is in this one, but there is a secret there that can end up with Charlie Castle being ruined, losing everything he owns, and going to jail. And that really is the kind of axis on which the drama spins in a way. There is a tragic ending to this film, without giving anything away, which, had things occurred in a different sequence, would not have ended tragically, which is which of course intensifies the tragedy of it too, the fact that the actions taken weren't necessary as events unfold.
Yes, because Dixie Evans, which is our Shelley Winters, she knows about it too.
She was there when this particular incident happened.
That's right.
And unfortunately, she's a starlet who is very fond of the bottle and is not particularly bright and doesn't realise that a lot of what she knows is very important to some very powerful men. There are some implications made that things could occur to her, which is another one of the prods that prompts certain action by characters, particularly Charlie Castle and his wife Marion.
Yeah, indeed. Look, all in all, this is a fab film. I think, you know, I'm a bit of a fan of, as you know, film noir, and in black and white. We have had a sort of film noir in colour, Chinatown, but this works so well in black and white. I don't think I could see it in any other way, actually.
No, I wouldn't either. But if people find it, and you can locate it around through the usual suspects, really be aware that the fact that it is an adapted stage play and that it doesn't play like a realistic film. It's a very much an intense, stagey drama. But having said that, it's an incredible piece of entertainment too. There are a whole bunch of different reveals as the plot goes on. There are twists and turns, and Odets drops you into the middle of the drama right at the start, so you just have to play catch up a little bit based on what people say and how they act on what's occurred, and there's a bit of backstory that comes into it. But it is very, very a pressure cooker drama, and fantastically well done for that.
Yeah, I agree. The screenplay was by a guy called James Poe. I've never heard of him.
No, he was a screenwriter in Hollywood, did a number of different things. Never really kind of top end of the range screenwriter, but he was very good at adapting other people's material. And in this one, he did very well. Odets isn't probably the easiest person to adapt, even into a kind of one or two set film like this one. But I think he did a great job there, and the sheer drama and the pacing of the story as it reveals makes it work as a film, but also as artifact of the play, which I really like. And I think Poe did a fantastic job in this one. And I've got an important piece of trivia about Rod Steiger, which people might like too.
Cool. Tell me.
Okay. You know how there's a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, where any movie actor can be associated with Kevin Bacon through 6 films at the most. Rod Steiger has a lower Bacon score than Kevin Bacon does. The University of Virginia did research on this using the Internet Movie Database, and the one actor in Hollywood history who's got the lowest score is Rod Steiger. His average score for any other actor in the Internet Movie Database is 2.679. Kevin Bacon's one is 2.955. So he's the most associated actor who's worked with more actors by association than anybody else in Hollywood history.
Wow. How amazing is that?
Wow. It is.
Gee, so I wonder how many films Rod Steiger's actually made.
Hundreds. This was a really good time in his life too, the 1955 area. He'd just done On the Waterfront with Brando, and he played the bad guy in Oklahoma. So the range of things he did in that middle patch of the 1950s, playing a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, a drama like On the Waterfront, and playing a totally different character in Stanley Schreiner Hoff in The Big Knife. The guy had range there. Towards the end of his career, he cashed a lot of checks. He just did things because people wanted his name value, and he just kind of bombastically went through a number of roles and things like that, which he, an older actor, you can excuse. But this was a choice period right between this and when he won the Academy Award for In the Heat of the Night in 1967.
Who's the narrator in this? We've neglected to mention that, actually.
Yeah, there's a little bit of narration at the start, just kind of setting the tone.
That's a good voice, man.
Richard Boone, the guy who was in Have Gun, Will Travel.
No.
Great character actor himself. I remember him in things like The Kremlin Letter and a bunch of other things. He did this film in Australia in the mid-50s called Kangaroo with Peter Lawford and Maureen O'Hara. But, yep, Paladin from Have Gun Will Travel did the narration.
Wow. With a rugged face like that, you think he would be in the movie somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think there was room for two rough mugs like his and Jack Palance's in the one film.
Right. Because the narration is it's got everything. It's got a little bit of sinister in it. It's got a little bit of, let me tell you something you're not aware of in it. It's a beautiful voice.
It's a little bit like George Sanders' narration at the start of All About Eve. It sets the cynical tone of the piece.
Yep. God, you're good. Gee, you're
Thank
good.
You.
Yeah, man. I just think it's fantastic. And you said the cinematographer was someone I've never heard of either.
Ernest Laszlo.
What else has he done?
He did a whole bunch of stuff. He did I did a thing with Robert in my podcast, Paleo Cinema Podcast, about Robert Aldridge's films in the 50s. He did Vera Cruz with Gary Cooper and Burt Lancaster. He did Apache with Burt Lancaster. He did Attack, that really good war film I mentioned earlier,
yeah.
And then went on to have a career doing a number of other things afterwards. But anything that I've seen of Laszlo's, the cinematography, it's not showy and doesn't draw attention to itself, but it draws the eye to where things need to be and does things in an imaginative way, sometimes on a very small budget. This wasn't a large budget film. And of course, it didn't need to be, being on essentially two sets, one in the outdoor, one in the garden and the living room. But he finds ways to make the spaces interesting and to move the camera around enough so it doesn't feel claustrophobic at all.
You just mentioned Paleo Cinema. Why wouldn't you tell us what your website is, where people can access the information that you have throbbing through your brain all the time?
Yep, they can go to paleo-cinema.com, and there are at the moment 86 podcasts about movies there.
My goodness me. How long has it taken you to do 86 podcasts about movies?
4 years and 1 month. I'm kept a little bit busy, but I love it, and I love sharing what I know about movies.
Thank you, Mr. Frost.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
What are we going to do next week?
We are going something totally different. We are doing The Young Girls of Rochefort, a French musical directed by Jacques Demy. Jean Kelly's in it, Francois Dauliac and her sister, Catherine Deneuve, Daniel Darrieux, George Chakiris, who was in West Side Story, and it's just a beautifully vivid, life-affirming and wonderfully scored musical with music by Michel Legrand.
Thank you so much. Good night, Terry.
Good night, over.
Chill out for Films with Frost. Terry Frost.